And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
I told her I don't want a tiny house.
I don't touch guns. I don't touch dice. I don't touch pans.
What is that, a bird cage? Another bird cage? So this is how the birds get in? The house has a bird problem. What happens when it rains?
Welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Tuesday, May 18th. Happy play-in day to everybody out there. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me, all playoffs long, Tass Mellis.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Tassie. We got my Top Shot Hot Boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-yo!
The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friend.
And last, certainly not least, making the magic happen, it's J.D.
Hello.
There he is, and here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button, leave your comments, and if you haven't already, come on, subscribe. And also, make sure you join us, No Dunks, a little later today on YouTube, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time for a special bonus podcast with MSNBC host Chris Hayes. We're going to talk to him about challenging Dr. Fauci to a game of one-on-one. The trajectory of his Chicago Bulls and how he possibly, maybe, inspired Steph Curry to go bonkers this season. So, yeah, 12:30 p.m. Eastern. This is going to be a lot of fun talking to Chris Hayes about hoops. So join us. Make sure you subscribe. Just subscribe to No Dunks so you know when we're going live. Email us your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Send them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. And finally, go grab yourself some sweet No Dunks merch to rep the brand. At nodunks.com. That's the very simple URL to remember there. There might be another limited edition wedgie shirt coming around the corner now that we've actually set the all-time record. What are you doing that for? Why the air quotes, Lily?
Limited edition. Like the last one was limited.
Well, it was limited. It was limited in the sense of like a time frame instead of just a number that they made.
Right.
I think that might be the way to do it. Just be like 15-minute window. Boom. Go. And
get them in.
Either it's, 50 of them, or maybe it's 199 like we did last time, because you guys really wanted a wedgie shirt. But anyway, we'll keep you posted on that. But here, on Tuesday, we are getting ready for the two Eastern Conference play-in games to tonight. And we're going to start with the second game, because it's probably the juicier of the two, let's be honest. It's the Wizards-Celtics game. The 8th-seeded Wizards in Boston take on the 7th-seeded Celtics. You win this, you're in as the 7th seed. Gets underway at 9 p.m. Eastern on TNT. Now, the Celtics won the season series 2-1, but all three games, Tass, took place a long time ago, before the trade deadline. You can sort of throw those games out. Well, what are you watching for in this one? We're obviously going to get to our predictions, but we're talking just like key players, X factors, things that you're going to keep your eye on in this game between the Wizards and Celtics. Get us going.
Yeah, we'll get into the nitty-gritty, but let's just start with the top. Let's start with the best players. I'm starting with Jason Tatum, who didn't have a good season series against these Washington Wizards, but he usually has Bradley Beal guarding him, and Bradley Beal is not 100%. Mm-hmm. He is limping around with that hamstring injury, and the St. Louis boys, they like going up against each other. They like playing that one-on-one game, but if Bradley Beal isn't 100%, I don't see how you try and stick Tatum with him. The whole game. And then if you're putting Rui Hachimura on him, which would be sort of the next logical choice, I think Jason Tatum is going to be licking his lips seeing a second-year player come over to try and guard him. And like our man David Aldridge said on The Athletic this week, Tatum can spin up a 40 or 50 burger at any time. Spin up a 40 or 50 burger. I don't know how you spin up a burger, but it's totally true. I think the Celtics have a lot of problems. Both these teams have a lot of defensive problems, which I think we'll get into. But I think you start with the Celtics offense because Tatum's not going to be able to be guarded by anybody. I think they're going to put a lot of points on the board, and that's going to trickle down to guys like Kemba Walker, who has surprisingly been really, really good this last month. He's been shooting super well. And Evan Fournier, who's probably an X factor. And then we'll get into the defense and all that. But I'm just looking first and foremost, who the heck is going to guard Tatum with Bradley Beal not feeling 100%?
Yeah, and then sticking with Beal there, too. I mean, he did have success against Boston this year. He scored 46 in one of the games, and then he did score 41 in another one. But, yeah, what percentage of health is Beal coming into this, Lele, and how much of an impact will this have on the game? Because we saw him there in that sort of game they really wanted, their last game of the regular season, to get up to that eighth spot so they would have a chance to potentially lose twice and still get into the playoffs. But he looked brutal.
Yeah.
Like, he should not have been out there, in all honesty. He probably shouldn't, but he's a gamer. He wanted to give it a go, and he wanted to help their chances to maybe get the seventh seed here even, or the eighth. But if Beal is not even close to 100%, like we don't think he will be, can the Wizards win this game still without him?
Yes, I think they can. I think because of the way Russell Westbrook has been playing, and you know that he's going to be up for it no matter what, gives that's the Wizards' best chance there. The Celtics as well just haven't been a super impressive home team this season. Not a bad record, but they've been down by 20 points a lot of times at home. And you saw recently they did come back and win that game, but they were down by 32 points at home to the San Antonio Spurs. So you can say, oh, maybe they find that in them, that fight in them to get this victory at home. Or the Wizards have got an opportunity here to really pound them, because I think that's the biggest thing here for the Celtics is obviously Jason Tatum's their star player, but Jaylen Brown will not play. We know that. He's out for the rest of the season. And Kemba Walker, he's been in and out of the lineup so much this season as well. So what sort of percentage of health is he at? As far as I can see for today, he is playing. They've named him, of course, but that's a question for the Celtics. But for Bradley Beal, I don't even know if they've definitely said he's playing tonight at this point, because the dilemma I think the Wizards are facing right now is, like, we win this game tonight and we're a lock. Or we try to win this game without Beal, knowing that we have the safety net, that we have another game to still get us into the playoffs and keep that hamstring a little bit fresher for the next game, potentially, if they face the winner of the Pacers and the Hornets game. Because if they play Beal tonight and he does more injury, potentially, of course, they lose him for the rest of the season, however long that is. Or they just decide, go all in tonight and try to win with as best we can, so then we at least get into the playoffs and he'll have a few more days to rest before the playoffs start. I mean, it's a tough decision for them, because obviously they would like to win this game tonight, but they don't have to win it. It's not their season isn't over if they
come
don't
on, mate. He's going to play. He's going to play in the play-in
he
game.
Played
he took
Sunday.
27
he
shots
played
on Sunday in a game that they didn't actually have to win. Of course he's going to play tonight.
I don't think it's 100% certain yet. I think they're going to have to wait and see, because if his hamstring plays up on him, then he's lost for the season. And if they can squeeze an extra day out of it, maybe that's the route they take. Because, like I say, I think they can win this game anyway without him. I think the Celtics have got enough problems as it is. But
he did say after Sunday that his hamstring didn't get any worse, and that
but
in that game, which wasn't a must-win game,
We could see him. He wasn't looking. He wasn't moving well. I mean, you can't say, well, the hamstring didn't get any worse. Well, by looking at him out on the court there, he wasn't moving as well as he needs to be moving. So it's a tough situation for them. I mean, if they want to win this game, obviously they want to win this game. But at what cost potentially is it to them?
One of the injuries that's also still up in the air, you keep talking about him with the Celtics, Trey, is the Time Lord there. Rob Williams, I don't know if we have an official update on whether he is or isn't playing in this. Last I heard, it wasn't looking good because he'd been missing some time, of course.
They listed him as probable practice on Monday, but still, that he's going to have a turf toe injury out there. Just fun to say turf toe. But yeah, he's not 100%.
Game time decision, they're saying.
Now, okay. Well, that's huge, though. I'm almost to the point, he has to play for the Celtics to possibly win this
100%
game. 100%
Wizards
just go to the rim. That's all they do. I know if Beal is a little hampered, then maybe that he starts settling for some outside shots. But you know they're going to put the pressure on at the pace they play, right, TK?
Beal always goes to the rim, and Westbrook always goes to the rim. The Celtics have been soft inside for the majority of the season, and to me, Robert Williams is their best rim protector. He's also their best athlete as a big guy, because if he's not able to go tonight, if they come to the game time decision, they say that turf toe, that thing is too painful, then you're looking at a lot of Tristan Thompson if you're the Celtics, which is not a huge influence at the rim, and you might even see a little bit of Luke Kornet, which could be some scary hours for Celtics fans there. You need Robert. But Robert Williams, you got to have him. He's got to play tonight because He puts the pressure on the rim also offensively. That's something that I think you see with the Celtics a lot is with Jason Tatum, with Kemba Walker, with Evan Fournier. Those are guys who want to take a pull-up jumper, and that's something that the Wizards definitely give up. That could be a way that the Celtics make some hay tonight, but they got to have somebody that at least puts a little bit of pressure on the rim. Offensively, Robert Williams does that. Roll into the hoop on pick and rolls, catching alley-oops, getting the offensive rebounds as well. Obviously, defensively, they're going to need him just to be a big guy at the rim against Westbrook and theoretically Beal. But yeah, if Robert Williams doesn't play tonight, pretty weird considering that guy was coming off the bench earlier in the season. But it feels like he's maybe the second or third most important player for the Celtics tonight. And if he's not able to go, then I don't see how they get any stops inside.
Yeah, and not even just maybe from the guards, but like Robin Lopez is like on fire with the hook shot right now. They've got Gafford. Like the Wizards actually play some big guys despite playing a fast pace. I mean, they're one of the fastest playing teams in the league, and they're going to go, especially with Westbrook obviously grabbing the board and sprinting up the other end. But yeah, how much is that a concern for you too, Tass? Like the Williams factor here that they need. I mean, yeah, it's going to be Thompson if it's not Williams, and like, I guess we've seen Tristan Thompson, you know, in postseasons prior, like have moments and play up above his capabilities, but you're asking for a lot at this guy at this point in his career, I think.
Oh, this is quite troubling for the Boston Celtics, no doubt. The Wizards like to score inside. They like to score in the mid-range when Westbrook likes to pull up, and those are two zones the Celtics don't stop anybody in. It's going to be a big problem. Yeah, the Wizards are going to get to the lane in this game, and you know, will the Tristan Thompson of his Cleveland days show up a little bit in this game? I think he'll bring, you know, a little bit of confidence and toughness into the lane. But yeah, if Robert Williams can't go, that's a big problem. I expect Robert Williams to play just because he did get on the floor on Monday, but he's not going to be 100%. And yeah, we're going to see Luke Cornett out there, you know, reaching out those hands as long as he can, staying long, but he's not going to be able to keep up with Westbrook. Yeah, I think there's going to be a ton of points put up on the board in this one. And the thing about the Wizards, even though they're 17-6 over their last 23, they play a lot of close games. They win, you know, by the skin of their teeth, and I think home court is gonna play into this a little bit. Yeah, like Lee said, the Celtics have not been good this year, but it's gonna be a tight one going down to the wire. And yeah, it's who makes shots in the end. Will Beal be able to score late in this game? Will Russell Westbrook be able to get his team over the line? Or are we going to see Robin Lopez hooking in a game winner? Probably not. but the Celtics, yeah, they have options. Fournier's playing all right. Kevin Walker, surprisingly, he's averaging 28 points a night, 50 and 40 from three, 50, 42 from three the last month or so. So yeah, they're losing games, but can they step up for one game? Can they get on a string for half a game? You know, you're not going to need to put four quarters together in this game. I think the Celtics are going to be able to score, and the Wiz should be too. It's gonna be a late close game, I imagine.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't be a my buddy Grish with this game when one of the teams inevitably goes up, you know, 15 to 20 points. And I'll almost lock it in that it's going to happen here in this game. Just don't turn the game off. It's not over because these teams will allow other teams back into it. And you said it there, Tass, how the Celtics, I saw the Schumann stat, they've played 43 games that were within 5 points in the last 5 minutes, most in the league. 43 games. And they went 17-26, so sub 40% there, fourth worst in the league in those games. So they don't always pull them out, but they're always there. They always got a chance for maybe like a Tatum game winner. But yeah, the Jaylen Brown not playing is hugely because I think otherwise the Celtics may go, you know what, let's go small, especially if there is no Robert Williams. But I'm not sure you can really do that without Jaylen Brown and his defensive versatility there, being able to play a lot of positions. Like, they could, I guess, but I think that could backfire because the Wizards do like to play again. They like to play very fast. So I just don't think that maybe is even an option. Like, hell, could we see Taco fall in this game? Like, is it a possibility? Is Brad Stevens crazy enough for Taco Tuesday to pull it out?
Well, I mean, I guess it's possible if Robin Lopez is causing them problems because they are so thin inside, and at least he's long and he's tall. But yeah, I think Robin Lopez actually does hold so much key here for the Wizards. If he's effective, and he's been effective, he's a tough little matchup in the paint there. He can score some points there and just put them under pressure. So maybe the Celtics do just try to match them with the small ball and say, let's just outrun these guys. But yeah, neither of them have got such a strong, convincing game that we've seen all season, it's hard to see exactly who's going to have the advantage in that respect. Because if it's a fast game, Russell Westbrook's going to love that. He's going to want it to get out there and just right. everyone just shooting and scoring and making it an offensive game rather than any sort of defensive game. So, you know, we've seen Taco at times. I think it was Joel Embiid. He put him on the floor against Joel Embiid at times when the Sixers were cooking with the Celtics. So he knows he's got Taco there. He doesn't really obviously provide much, but he's a presence. He's a presence.
Yeah, he does have a big body.
Yeah. Exactly. That's all it is. And, you know, giving up Daniel Tice at the trade deadline, I think right now they would at least like to have him. I think he's still their best interior defender, which is not saying much because they didn't have tons. So maybe we get to see a little bit of him, Taco Bell.
Maybe. And, like, then I always just wonder with this game here at TASS, like, are we overthinking it with all these, like, oh, what to watch for and X Factor? Does it just come down to, like, hey, what Russell Westbrook do we get tonight? Is it good Russ or bad Russ? Because, you know, he's been good for the last, month and a half here, and they've been winning all of these games. But we know, especially in playoff matchups from time to time, we can get a clunker from Russ. Marcus Smart could get into his head, get those little like one-on-one pissing contests going, and maybe we get a unfortunate for Wizards fans, like a 4-for-22 type of Westbrook game. It's always in play with Russ. You know he's going to play hard, but he could get caught up in taking some of the bad shots, falling in love with the three a little much, and maybe that is what the Celtics need, the Beantown boys need, just a bad Russ game, maybe, right?
No doubt. I've been consuming a lot of previews here, and it's getting deep. We could see six conventional centers in this game.
Yeah, buddy.
Mentioned
yeah, buddy.
Alex Len, Robin Lopez, and then Daniel Gafford on the Wizards side. And then Tristan Thompson, Luke Kornet, and Robert Williams. Taco Fall. We could have seven.
It's going to come down to the end. This is Trey Kirby's dream. It's the big man game tonight.
yeah, that's right. Taco and Luke Kornet. Can't wait to see it form a bold Daniel Gafford. I'm not going to lie to you, Tass. And Daniel Gafford as an X factor.
Sure.
Especially if Robert Williams isn't playing. Daniel Gafford will be the most athletic big man out there, and he's been key next to Westbrook as a lob threat.
Yeah, it's wild how many alley-oops Daniel Gafford has got since the trade deadline, since he moved to the Wizards, in comparison to what he got pre-trade deadline with the Bulls. Westbrook loves finding him. And that's the topic of if they start to run, Daniel Gafford will be the recipient of a lot of passes if he's in there. But criticism of Scottie Brooks is, you play Alex Len too much. Why are you starting Len? And then Daniel Gafford comes in. He started the second half in their last game. But why are you playing three centers out there? But it is likely that no team really builds up a big enough lead. Could be the Wizards build up a 10, 12, 15-point lead. We've seen that a ton against the Celtics. Allow that to happen, then it'll be close in the end. Yeah, I agree that maybe Russell Westbrook, especially with Bradley Beal not being 100%, might try and take it upon himself to fire away in a not very productive fashion for the Washington Wizards, where, we'll see a few clanks at the end where he tries to shoot a little bit too much. And, the Marcus Smart factor is there. It'd be nice for the Celtics if they had Jaylen Brown to just stick Bradley Beal, and then Marcus Smart's goal, his whole objective in this game would be to get under Russell Westbrook's skin.
Right.
But that probably will happen at the end of the game. I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see Westbrook probably taking a few too many shots. And I think if Bradley Beal ain't right, it's a big, big problem for the Wizards. They're 2-10 without him this year, so their offense just falls off a cliff. So if they can't go to him at the end of games, he'll be on the floor, but if he can't go to him at the end of games, then Russ just got to make shots.
Okay, so this is, I think, the only one of the play-in games where the road team is favored in it. Last I checked, at least, and that's because the Wizards have been playing unbelievable basketball here. The Celtics have not. They've floundered a little bit. I think a lot of people think Boston might be the old 1-2-3 Cancun vibes to them right now, too, Trey. Like, let's just get the hell done with this season, and maybe you don't even care all that much. I don't know. To, like, get in there. I'm sure the players are going to give their best effort. But where are you leaning here in terms of your predictions for this game tonight? You like the Wizards? You like the Celtics? Blowout, close? What do you think?
Yeah, I like the Wizards. I think they're taking it tonight. They've been playing really well over the last 2 months of the season. They are in better health, at least, than the Celtics are, because at least Bradley Beal is likely going to play, whereas we know Jaylen Brown is not going to play. And even Marcus Smart, a guy who is an emotional leader for the Beantown Boys, said Jaylen Brown is a huge tone setter and energy guy for us. So, I don't know. The Celtics have been really inconsistent all year, and it feels like anytime they're inconsistent, it's because they lack the energy. and the effort, you'd think that's probably not going to be the case, playing in a play-in game where you need to win to get into the playoffs, but we know that Westbrook is going to have the Wizards ready to play. It's going to be 100% effort on that side of the court, so knowing that, I got to go with the Wizards tonight.
Okay. Lee, what's your prediction for this game?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, you talk about Russell Westbrook because we know he does put up the odd clunker, but the lane will be open. He can get inside and he's at his best when he does penetrate and score those sort of baskets. So I think the Scott Brooks and the Wizards will say, just keep on attacking into that painted area there. And I think that gives the edge to the Wizards. Obviously, Jason Tatum is capable of really dragging the Celtics to a victory, but haven't been super convinced by the Celtics recently, and I just think the Wizards have been playing better basketball at the right time. So I'll take Washington to win the game.
All right. Tass, same thing, or are you going with the Beantown boys?
Yeah, let's cook up some beans. I'm going Boston.
Oh,
There isn't really a good reason to pick the Boston Celtics, but I'll just take them because they are the underdog. I'm sure they will look at that and say, come on. We can get fired up for one game here. They definitely have had a problem doing that throughout the regular season. And they will probably give up a lot of points in the lane and in the mid-range. But I'm trusting Jason Tatum to be the guy that they lean on offensively and the home court advantage, whatever that is, to get them over the line.
I'm going to go with the Wizards. Though, like I said, this game is going to go like this. Washington's going to get a big lead. Whatever it is, 15-16, Celtics will fight back, call it the fake comeback, call it whatever you want. Then there will be some like sort of like, uh-oh, what are you doing, Russ moments, be it a turnover, a bad rushed shot, like a three-point attempt when they wouldn't need it. And like the Celtics will have a chance, but the Wizards will pull it out of their ass and win this game by like 1 or 2 points. I think it's going to be a very, very close game this nightcap here on TNT with this second game. But I do have the Wizards ultimately moving on. And I'm almost shocked you're taking Boston, Tass, but I don't mind it because it feels like every prediction I've seen or heard on a podcast is taking Washington to win this game. There are not a lot of people backing the Celtics despite having home court advantage and obviously still having a lot of talent in Tatum and Kemba and even Fournier, like you said. Like, they can score probably on this Washington team as well. But
for sure,
a lot of people picking Washington. But let us know in the stream team who you guys got tonight. You got the Beantown boys grabbing that 7 seed, or Washington ultimately taking on the Nets. I mean, people are excited about that lately. Would love to see a Kevin Durant versus Westbrook at least playoff matchup. Gives it a little extra juice there for a 2-7 matchup. I don't think people would pick the Wizards to beat the Nets, but it's the storylines that sometimes matter. But that's what we got. Three of us taking Washington, Tass taking the Beantown boys. Anything to add to that series before we move on to the next one? No siree, Bob.
Don't think so.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Well, let's go to the first one tonight. They get us started. Hornets Pacers, 6:30 p.m. Eastern on TNT. Hornets won the season series 2-1. Though Brogdon and Caris LeVert didn't play together in any of those three games for the Indiana Pacers. But Trey, you get us started with this one. What are you watching? Key players, whatever, between this Hornets-Pacers matchup?
It's all about that IPO, Skeets. That initial playoff offering from LaMelo Ball playing in his first playoff play-in game. I can't wait to see it. I'm not super worried that he's going to be phased by the uptick in intensity here, playing in his first postseason game. The guy's been playing televised big games since he was like 14 years old. So yeah, this is going to be different, no doubt about it. But I have a feeling LaMelo will be ready for it. The question for me is, what kind of impact is LaMelo ball going to have in this game just because of the player type he is. The biggest thing he can do to really help the Hornets tonight is to just ensure that they're playing fast. They play a faster game of basketball than the Pacers want to play, and if this is an up-and-down game, certainly that is going to favor Charlotte. However, the Pacers could go out of their way to try and make LaMelo a scorer. He's gone 17 for his last 55 after returning from that wrist injury. And yeah, I mean, we've heard James Borrego talk about the joy that LaMelo plays with and the joy that he brings to his teammates. If the Pacers come out and say, hey, we're guarding everybody else, let's see if LaMelo's going to score 35 and beat us tonight, that might be tough for the Hornets, because we know LaMelo wants to get other people involved, and the Hornets are at their best when they're running the court and some other players are getting touches and Terry Rozier has the ball and he's scoring against the bench defense and he's getting catch and shoot threes. That's how the Hornets are at their best. But we've seen great point guards be neutralized a little bit in the playoffs before just by turning them into scorers and taking away the passing lanes that they're used to getting. So it'll be interesting to see how the Pacers go about trying to get the ball out of LaMelo's hands and how LaMelo is able to have an impact if the Pacers make it a point to have him be a scorer.
For sure. What are you watching in this one, Lili?
Well, this one, again, sort of comes down to who's even playing here for the Indiana Pacers, because at this moment, I think they've got Brogdon as a game-time decision. Sabonis, I think, is playing. They've got him listed as questionable. And then Aaron Holiday as well is still out according to the injury report, but I expect him to come back. If Brogdon plays, then that's huge, I think, for the Pacers, because he's a very good defender and he can slow down, you know, LaMelo and just get in his grill and make it a little bit tougher for him, because I think LaMelo, you know, as their point guard, he's going to control so much. So obviously there's no Gordon Hayward either for the Hornets, but they've been without him for a long time. They didn't finish the season all that strongly, the Hornets, but getting LaMelo back, I think, was key for them. I think they've got better scorers as far as guys like Rozier. We know he can get going. If Devontae Graham's hitting his threes, that's important as well for the Hornets. They played well in Indiana this season. Oh, no Miles Turner as well at this stage for the Pacers.
He's not playing.
Yeah, he won't be playing. So they're just missing so many players. I think that really gives the Hornets a good opportunity here to just get things right. They're only missing Hayward out of their big-name players. So, you know, if they shoot the ball well, obviously, you know, hit their threes and really just put pressure on the Pacers on the defensive end, I just don't think the Pacers have enough offense. Even though the Hornets aren't a super great defensive team, I just don't think they have enough people who can score the ball. So I think it really comes down to, you know, the Hornets controlling the tempo and the pace, pushing the ball and hitting threes early on, and I think they can. I think they can put this one away pretty early if they're scoring the ball.
Well, Indiana has best player in this game though, by a mile for being
in
a
Sabonis.
But
again, haven't seen him.
He's playing, Lee. I mean, they're just like gonna say he's not. He's been playing, and you know they want to have some doubt in the Hornets over there. And how
defensively,
play.
You know, he's not a great defender,
right?
So there's a chance there. I just don't think the Pacers have enough offense in this game. To myself, especially if Brogdon isn't playing, he's another 20 point per game scorer. So if he plays, it changes everything. But again, he's still listed as questionable at this point. We need some more updated injury reports here.
Tass, what are you thinking with this one? You know, leaning towards the Pacers, leaning towards the Hornets. What are you watching for?
Well, I think the Hornets are going to have to get to the rim because the Pacers' strength is guarding the three-point line. That's what they do. Nate Bjorkman's going to get them out there. TJ McConnell's going to be a pest out there guarding the three-point line. But they allow the highest percentage of shots at the rim per cleaning the glass. So that's where we could have a LaMelo Ball show if he wants to get to the lane. That's totally a possibility. Mm-hmm. I think that's where they're going to be able to score. But I think the Pacers are going to do a decent job of taking away Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham. And then, at the other end of the floor, I think they do have enough offense. You know, Caris LeVert is a very, very capable guy. Sabonis and Brogdon, it's enough offense. It's a weird, weird matchup because, first of all, this is the elimination game, and they shove this in the early slot, which
yeah, it's
I get
the Hornets Pacers. Nobody's gonna be watching this except us.
I get it. Yeah. I know, but I hear what you're saying. The other one is far juicier.
Yeah.
The other one's single elimination. This one, I mean, this is the single elimination game. Yeah. The Pacers or Hornets go home. It's really weird. The Pacers are the home court have home court advantage in this game, and they're 13-23 at home. That's just a very strange record for a team that makes the postseason. And you got to call it the postseason and not the playoffs, because the playoffs start on Saturday. But the Hornets aren't, you know, all that much better on the road. I think, yeah, the Pacers will do a good job of sticking on the perimeter. But we could have a LaMelo show. That's what it really comes down to, I think, for me. I don't see, you know, Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham doing that. I think they'll stop P.J. Washington. If LaMelo wants to do it, if he wants to put up 30, I think he can if he drives in, because I don't think Sabonis is stopping him at the rim, especially with no Miles Turner out there. So that's my key for the Hornets, is being able to get to the rim. But yeah, I believe in the Pacers. They have enough depth, even though, yeah, T.J. Warren out for the season and Miles Turner out. They've got all these guys that are good, solid guys, and they still have enough of them, I think, to win.
Yeah, this is just a weird game because you slipped it in there, Lee. The Hornets have lost. They lost their final five regular season games to fall to 10th. Like, the seventh seed was there for the taking with some of these teams the way they were floundering, and instead they did the opposite. They lost a lot of these games. Now they're the 10th seed. The Pacers, remember what? 2 weeks ago, we were like, they hate their coach. And he might be like fired in the off season. Like, what's going on in that locker room? Now, they actually did okay, like splitting, their record in their final 10 games after those reports, you know, we're swirling about Nate Bjorkman in there. So I guess that's decent. Sabonis has been unbelievable, in the last month, averaging a triple double. That's gotten overlooked because he plays for the Indiana Pacers and it's, you know, the final month of the season. There's a lot of other stuff going on. So it's just a strange game, but I think Caris LeVert is the ultimate wild card in this. You pointed out Kemba Walker doing special things lately for the Celtics task. Same thing with Caris LeVert. He's averaging 27.3 points per game over his last nine, shooting lights out from three, 42 from distance. Sabonis, I do think tonight, I love the concept, like you're saying, Lee, of the Hornets trying to run him off the floor. You know, they go P.J. Washington at the five, right? Like, they could do that. But I also think Sabonis is going to have a monster game tonight, where people are going to be feeling a little silly that he wasn't even in consideration for all NBA teams. Like, he's going to have, I think, a dominant game.
He made the eighth team, didn't he?
My fifth team.
Oh, fifth team.
But my point is, he's going to put up the biggest stat line from tonight and get his team the victory. I do think he's going to sort of abuse the Hornets. And I think he's that damn good. So they're just going to be like, well, the ballot's in. Like, you've already made your All-NBA picks. And you're like, oh, yeah, Sabonis had a great year. And like, oh, I forgot about him. Like, he didn't even, like, there's no consideration for him. So I think him and LeVert are the two best players in this game is what I'm getting at. You guys are saying LaMelo. Like, I think the Pacers would want that. Like, I think, Trey, you sort of did say that. Like, if LaMelo, they're hitching the ride to LaMelo to score 30-35. That's the game plan, I would hope, from the Pacers. Like, yeah, that's the way we want to go. And maybe he can pull it out of his ass. It'd be awesome for the league if LaMelo balled out tonight. No doubt. He's already, like, probably the rookie of the year favorite, despite missing some time. But I think the Pacers are being, like, oddly overlooked here. Again, I just don't have a lot of confidence in the Hornets either. It's like, maybe if this was a month and a half ago, but have you seen them play recently? They're not that good.
Both of these teams are not that good now, but the Pacers have a longer track record of being good. Caris LeVert has hit big shots in the playoffs before. Sabonis has been to the playoffs basically every season of his career, and I do think he will be the guy for the Pacers who tries to control the pace. Oh, nice one from me right there. But yeah, I would love to see Sabonis have a big game. LeVert, I think, is a little bit more inconsistent. It feels like he has an amazing game and then an okay game, then an amazing game, then an okay game. It all averages out to being pretty good, but they need him to be special tonight. I think the Pacers are going to win this one personally.
Okay.
Just because they've got that little bit of experience in their back pocket, and for whatever reason, when Goga and Greg got into it, that seemed to have turned the tables for the Pacers. They've been better since those two guys were screaming at each other on the sideline.
G&G Temper Factory over there.
That's
in the
right.
Pacers.
That's right.
Okay, so you're going Pacers. In what sounds like what? Somewhat of a close game, too, because you don't have a lot of confidence in really either of these teams?
Yeah, exactly. I think this is going to be pretty close. Both of these teams have had really solid starts to the season, then struggled once we got into the playoff stretch here. More than likely, it comes down to Terry Rozier versus Caris LeVert in the final couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess I will go Caris LeVert in that situation is what I'm saying.
Well, Terry Rozier hits a lot of clutch threes, though.
That's right. Clutch Terry, no doubt.
Yeah. Okay, so you're going Pacers. Lee, let's go to you next. Your prediction. You liking the Hornets in this one?
Yeah, I do. I mean, not convincingly, but I just think they have got a better way of scoring. And again, Brogdon hasn't played in nearly 3 weeks. So if he does come back, you know, even if he's 100%, he might be not up to speed. So, but he's huge for the Pacers because of what he does at both ends of the ball. He can control the pace for him. He can hit big shots and he can defend well. So if he's playing, it certainly makes it tougher for the Hornets. But I just think the Hornets can outscore them in this one. Probably won't be a great defensive battle, but I think they've got enough. So I think the Hornets win it in a, you know, close-ish one.
Okay. Tass, where are you going with this one? Indiana or Charlotte?
Oh, give me the Pacers. You think you're going to walk into Indiana and win when they're 13-21 at home this season?
Everyone does.
Yeah, everybody definitely does. But I'll take the team that has firepower, and the Hornets, again, not playing well. So, yeah, I think the Pacers will have enough at the end of the games. And, again, they do a really good job of taking away the three-point line. So they'll be scarying, tarrying off the line there. Scary Terry, not as good. Not as good as Trey's pace show. I know. It was a bit of a stretch, but we got there. I think they will try and force guys to come off the bounce, and then they'll probably score, but I think they won't score at as good a rate as if they were firing away from threes with Terry, Devontae, and PJ. So yeah, give me the Pacers. I don't think this one will be super duper close, and then people will be complaining about, well, is this play-in tournament 9-10? We got a blowout in the first game. Boo.
You're probably right. That will happen. Just watch it. And then the truth is, like, is anyone taking either of these teams to win the next game to then get in against even the Wizards or the Celtics? Probably not.
Should they have started with the Western Conference? It doesn't matter.
No. We got to get that hype going for the Lakers-Warriors on Wednesday night. This is right. I think they got this right, Tess. You know, and even the early start at 6:30, they're almost trying to bury this game. They're like, hopefully it's a close game in the second half when people are tuning in. They're like, oh, wow. Hey, it's a one-point game. This is exciting. Who's this Terry Rozier guy? Wow. Cool.
Good question from BT and the stream team, who says, why isn't this game on right now?
Great
10 o'clock start, sure.
Yeah, that's not bad. Or at least a nice 12:30 or 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern start. Yeah, a little matinee game.
Sure.
Tuesday afternoon.
You're asking good questions here. Well, yeah, I mean, why not, Lee? They're saying this is sort of March Madness-like. Well, let's really lean into it then. Let's start those games up early. Let's play this game in Boise, for all I care. I mean, it doesn't matter to me.
Mayhem. I don't know.
Yeah, keep workshop. That's okay. That's not bad. I'm also going with the Pacers, which I'm a little surprised that three of us are taking Indiana. Again, a lot of people I see with this prediction, more people taking Charlotte in this game. But I'm with you guys. I'm expecting, obviously, a huge Sabonis game, and I do think that LeVert will... I think LeVert and Terry Rozier will sort of cancel each other out. The Brogdon playing, I think he is going to play, and I think if he wasn't, then I think I'd take Charlotte. But I do think he's such a stabilizing force on both ends of the floor that will get the Pacers a win in this. So I got Indiana moving on to lose against the Celtics or the Wizards in a game later this week. Okay, so let's hear from you guys with all of those. Drop your predictions in the YouTube comments. Who you like winning tonight, by how many, and, you know, drop a surprise or X Factor player there too if you want. Someone that's going to surprise us all. Maybe it is a holiday for all we know. Okay, got some news before we wrap up here. The Sacramento Kings are bringing back coach Luke Walton, by all reports, Lee, for his third season, despite the Sacramento Kings playoff drought reaching 15 years. Obviously haven't been there under Luke Walton. Are you shocked by this at all, that Luke's going to get at least a third go at it?
Somewhat shocked, yes. Yeah. According to the report, Walton, though, has the support of the front office and his players, which is good, and also the opposite of what we've heard throughout his 2 years in Sacramento. But both things can be true because things change over time, you know? Like, Buddy Hield and him didn't really get along, but they seem to be buds at points of the time this season. Nice. But I think he also, this is the key thing, he has 2 years left on his deal, which is a big factor because in the last 6 years they've had five coaches and had to pay out Dave Yeager for the final year of his contract while they're also paying Luke Walton. And I think if they fire Luke now, they'd also have to pay two coaches for the next two seasons. And that's something that I think Sam Amick addressed that earlier in one of his reports about the Kings, whether it was late last season or early this season. And I also think the Kings want to sort of, you know, project an image of stability and trust in their own decision making, because it's been a disaster for the last 4 or 5 years. You know, coach comes in, George Karl immediately seemed to be the wrong choice with he and DeMarcus Cousins were clashing. You know, then Dave Yeager came in, he got fired. So, look, ultimately, I don't think this is any more than a lifeline here for Luke Walton for about 15 to 20 games next season. Because if they start off bad and they're 2-12 or 2-13, then they probably fire him anyway after that. They had the worst defense this season in the league, so he's got so much area to improve there, and they looked awful. And their offense is very inconsistent. Now, De'Aaron Fox was good, but he missed the last like 10 to 12 games of the seasons as well. And I think outside of he and Tyrese Halliburton, anybody else on that roster can be had. So the Kings have got a big offseason coming up. How are they going to improve, whether it's internally or via trades or drafting, or, you know, whoever they want. But the thing is, ultimately, I just don't think this is anything more than a stay of execution for Luke Walton, because he has to get results early into next season. They can't afford to start off badly, because if they get submarined in the first quarter of the season, then they're going to have to make a change. So, but I guess good on the Kings for not doing what everyone expected them to do. I think that was the thing. It was like he's done as soon as their season's done, but they've decided to swerve and hang on to Luke Walton. So
So why are they swerving? Is it because that they, like you said, owe him a lot of money and they can't defer on that? Like Sam Amick of The Athletic last month said it was like $11.5 million. So is it a financial reason that they're not firing him? Or, and I think it's an and or here, or a combo of, I should say, it sounds like De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton go into bat for Luke Walton, like the star players on the team, you know, showing support for him. And I think in my mind that they completely just saved his job. Like if those two guys, especially Fox as the like franchise guy on the squad, if he's like, no, this guy's horrible, like get him out of here, then I think he is Trey. But you know, they like Tyrese Halliburton in his like exit meetings talked quite glowingly about Luke Walton. So you know, he had a good year as the rook, so maybe that, you know, carries a little weight there in the front office, and they decide to run it back for one more year.
Yeah, the last time the Kings had a coach that was working was Mike Malone, and they let him go despite the fact that Boogie Cousins was a big Mike Malone backer. As we've seen, Mike Malone has gone on to have success in Denver. Obviously, Boogie was not long for Sacramento after then. So yeah, if you're your star player and your star rookie are both back in the coach, I suppose it makes a little bit of sense to bring him back then, but the writing was on the wall in March. Sam Amick and Jason Jones had a report basically calling this a gap year for the Kings. This team has missed the playoffs for 15 straight seasons and was happy to take a gap year. I mean, like, that's what the Kings are for you. They're listening to De'Aaron Fox as their star player, who's saying, I love Luke Walton as a coach, probably because he's had bad NBA coaches up until now. Tyrese Halliburton has had one NBA coach right now. You're trying to appease your players, but I don't know if you should be trusting them here, because there's a lot of buzz about Karl Anthony Towns being the next guy to leave his team eventually. I think it's going to be Fox with the way that things have gone in Sacramento. Obviously, Bogdan Bogdanovic is balling for the Hawks right now. They botched that whole thing over the summer. Marvin Bagley hasn't improved. They had the Buddy Hield situation, which was more dramatic at the beginning of the season, but seemed to peter off during the year. But you have to imagine there's still a little bit of animosity there, especially when you consider that the three best players on the Kings all want to have the ball in their hands handling the ball. How does that all work together? I don't know. The Kings remain the Kings. Who takes a gap year when you've missed the playoffs for 15 years?
Yeah, anything to add to the Kings' decision here? Again, by all reports, tasked to bring Luke Walton back. Love it, hate it. What do you think?
I guess he gets one more year to see if he has a Bogdan Bogdanovic. Nah, whoa. Nah, too much. Whoa. Too, much. Yeah, too many G's.
Yeah.
Careful, too many man. G's. Careful. Bogdan Bogdanovic. Anyways, yeah, I think they are just trying to project this image of solidarity, just to not flip over another coach for another year. But appeasing Fox and Halliburton is not the worst thing they could do. Mm-hmm. And so they get one more shot, whether they bring back Rashawn Holmes. That's their... really, they're three guys going forward as a core if they do bring back him. And Luke's going to get another shot. I mean, 15 years is such a long time. Luke was balling for the Lakers the last time the Sacramento Kings made the playoffs. And, man, it's tough. It's tough if you're a Sacramento Kings fan. But just not putting all their money into supporting players like they have the last few seasons. See, Harrison Barnes, Corey Joseph, Trevor Ariza, Dwayne Dedman might be a start. So I would take that as a bit of a positive. Like, I think they understand that there's a couple guys in their backcourt that are untouchable, and hopefully they start to build a little bit more around that. And then maybe we'll see how good Luke Walton is as a coach. But he hasn't been able to pull these guys together quite yet.
Yeah, they need to play some defense. I mean, start there. Like, get like a average defense going with this star backcourt in Fox and Halliburton. And they haven't been able to. So is that because of Luke Walton's defensive scheme? Is that because of the players on the roster? Is it some combination of both? Probably. But they are just, like you were saying, Lee, like one of the worst. Wait, weren't they worst of all time at one point? I don't know if they got out of that distinction, but I know they're bottom three in the NBA in points allowed per game, the opponent's field goal percentage, the defensive rating. I mean, it was brutal. Anyone could score on them. So they just got to get out. Just improve on that end, and you might be sniffing a play-in tournament. So he'll get a chance at it, but I think it'll be a short leash. I would imagine. Like, they cannot start, you know, 5-15. I mean, it'll be a wrap, right? He would be fired, I think, at that point. So maybe they start, you know, a little more consistent, a little more average. At least 500 would be a good start there for the Kings. All right. Few restricted free agency sort of rumors here. Restricted free agent Lonzo Ball says he would love to return to the Pelicans. Tass, you see that happening?
No, sir. That's nice to say.
Yeah,
probably you say that, but he signed up for Clutch Sports to go get paid, and I don't think the Pelicans are going to pay him as much as other teams with this point guard class that's happening right now. Kyle Lowry and Dennis Schroeder are the biggest names alongside Lonzo Ball. Who knows what Kyle Lowry does, if it's a sign and trade with the Raps, because he respects Masai Ujiri, Dennis Schroeder, but Lonzo Ball is a huge name this offseason amongst guards. And he even said, while saying, yeah, I want to come back, he also said, I was a 3-and-D type guy this year. I think I played my role pretty well. Mm-hmm. But at this point of his career, I kind of get the feeling that he'd want an expanded role, especially when you sign with Clutch Sports. That tends to happen. I could see him working with the New York Knicks as a possibility there, because they've done a very good job with the front office to save all their money. I know everybody and their mom talks about the Knicks with every free agent, but I think at this point, with the way the Knicks have preserved their cap, it could legitimately work. And I know the Pelicans and Zion Williamson specifically have said, I want Lonzo Ball to come back, but they have to build around Zion Williamson right now. They don't want to be one of these franchises that people are talking about their stars leaving, like Karl Anthony Towns or De'Aaron Fox, like we just mentioned. Is Lonzo Ball the best fit for Zion Williamson? No. Could he work? Maybe. But they didn't work this year all that well together. They have to build a team that complements Zion, and I don't think you bring back Lonzo Ball on a long-term contract after what happened this year. And somebody's going to sign him to a long-term deal. Somebody will, because Clutch Sports does that for you, and because of the free agent class. So I see him going elsewhere. But he did play pretty well this year in the amount of time that he was on the floor.
So $20 million plus we're looking at here probably for Lonzo Ball
in
a contract. Yeah. And you don't think, Griffin, the Pelicans would maybe want to sign him to that type of deal? You know, Trey, especially with Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who was actually playing really good before he got injured, and they probably see him as like that he could obviously take over that place of Lonzo Ball, especially being much cheaper on a rookie contract and running stuff through Zion as it is anyway. But what do you expect here with Lonzo Ball? Yeah, it's one thing to say this, would love to return, but do you think it actually happens, or do you agree with Tass?
Well, just like Tass said, this could easily be some kind of a sign-and-trade thing, but I personally think Lonzo fits really nice next to Zion. If you're looking at the team construction, similar to how the Heat built their championship teams, you would say that Zion's LeBron, a forward who's handling the ball a lot. I guess Brandon Ingram would probably be Dwayne Wade in that scenario, a second scorer who's capable of giving 25 a game, decent shooter from the outside. That's an advantage over Wade. That would mean that Lonzo would have to be Mario Chalmers. Do you want to pay $20 million a year for a Mario Chalmers? I don't know about that, but I do think that they're a nice three together because Lonzo's going to play defense. He's going to get the ball up the court really fast. And he did have a solid season shooting the ball. It's not like he's putting fear into anybody's hearts as a shooter, but if you're taking 8 threes a game, knocking down 37% of them, yeah, that's valuable next to a guy like Zion Williamson. To me, it's just the other guys who are a problem. You can't play somebody like Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams alongside Ingram, Zion, and Lonzo in the starting lineup. You can have maybe one non-shooter out there with those guys, but I don't think you can have two. They got to find their Chris Bosh, their Shane Battier, their Ray Allen, the role guys who are going to defend their positions and knock down the open shots.
What do you think, Lely?
It's his consistency that he really needs to work on, because if you look at that number, those, you know, the percentages was about the same as it was last season, but he took more and made more. So that's great. But he just has games where he goes like 0 for 8 or he might go 6 for 10 from downtown. So What are the Pelicans getting out of him? Because he does seem to me that when he has a great game, you can be convinced, like, yeah, this guy could be the right player next to Zion. But then when he has a couple of those stinkers in a row, you're just like, no, we can't rely on him because that shot is just comes and goes too inconsistently. But it's certainly improved the mechanics. It looks much better. He shoots it with confidence a lot of the time. But it's just, you know, looking through his box scores over like a course of a couple of games there, you know, he went 0 for 8, 8 for 17, 1 for 9, 7 for 13 from downtown. So it really is feast or famine with him. But that's okay. He's shown he's got the work ethic to go out there and really work on that and try to make that into his game, because he's a good rebounder, he's a good defender. He does bring a lot to the table. It's just from night to night, it can vary a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, I think he gets a decent contract. I'm not sure from who, but if the Pelicans don't believe in him, then they really have to make sure they get it right with the guy who does come in, because you would think going forward, whoever that point guard is, and if it is from internal with Alexander Walker there, that's fine, but that's going to be the guy sort of to go along there with Zion and Brandon Ingram. So it's a big question there for Dave Griffin to be right. Okay, well, you know, can we live with a little bit of inconsistency from Lonzo, or do we have to splash out on someone else who, of course, then, you know, you have to bring that person in and they have to learn the system surrounding Zion and Brandon Ingram. So tough decision, I think, for the Pels.
Yeah. And we'll see if Griffin can get anyone to give him something for Eric Bledsoe, because you would imagine he'd be very active in trying to trade Bledsoe, but I'm not sure the return you're going to get is going to be all that high. I think you're right. It'd be internal that if Lonzo's gone and they don't want to match, because it's unrestricted free agency, someone can offer him the deal, and then the Pelicans, of course, can match. But I think it's going to be a number a little too rich for their blood, possibly. And instead of like wanting to even sort of maintain the asset, which we do see some teams do and some front offices do, I think they do look at Alexander Walker and go, no, I think he can sort of replicate to some extent in the coming years here and grow with Zion and maybe move on from Lonzo. That's my guess with this one.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
But one more in the restricted free agency rumor report, Bulls big man Lauri Markkanen, Trey. He plans to test the waters of restricted free agency. So what do you think is going to happen with him here and this report from Casey Johnson, you know, talking about him going to go out there and have a look at possibly what type of deal he could get and maybe move on from the Bulls? Or do you think they could keep him?
Maybe these two go hand in hand, Skeetzerino. That was a deal at the trade deadline that was bandied about, Lauri Markkanen for Lonzo Ball. Maybe we run it back in the summer. You both get your big free agency deals. Neither of us wants to match, so let's just trade you for each other. Maybe that happens. Lauri Markkanen, though, he's going to have a long career. I just don't think it's really going to be for the Bulls. Seven-footers that shoot near 40% from three, those guys stick around, and that's what Lauri did this year. Shot a career high from three, 40.2%. That's awesome. Also had career lows in points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. And a lot of that is because he went from their opening night starting power forward to the Bulls to being on the trade block, like I said. Discussed for Lonzo, we thought maybe he's going to be part of the Vooch deal. Apparently they wanted Wendell Carter Jr. a little bit more. Markkanen got a start next to Vooch in their very first game, and Billy Donovan had seen enough, sent him to the bench pretty much immediately, said, you're going to be our reserve. 3-4-5? Come in, shoot some threes. And that's pretty much all Lauri Markkanen did. That's a valuable player for a team that's contending, right? When you are the Cleveland Cavaliers and you need a seven-footer, you can go find a Channing Frye who's not really doing anything, but when you are a young player going into restricted free agency, you don't want the Channing Frye treatment. Lauri Markkanen's going to want a lot more money, being a number seven pick recently. And I think that's why you're hearing some praise for Lauri from the Bulls. After their last game, Billy Donovan said, I really, really love Lauri as a player. He's a great guy, and he's been an incredible teammate, and he has sacrificed a lot. A lot of talk about his personality there. Karnishevas said yesterday, I think Lowry's an essential part of our team. We hope he's part of what we're building here. Maybe they do, or maybe they're just pumping their bags for a sign and trade here. I think that's a little bit more realistic. Seven-foot shooting guards, not a desirable player type out there usually.
He's got to stay on the court though as well. That's the other problem. He's always injured. And he played what 50 odd games this season. I know it was obviously a shortened season, but it just feels...
He was like at one point he had come back. I think was that from the COVID-19 health and safety protocols, and then he was balling there for for a stretch. You know, he was like a 20 point per game scorer, which we sort of think he could be in this league. And then it was like a bum like shoulder, right? It was like a sort of like a fluke, I want to say, but he always has these like little weird injuries. Yeah. And he can't stay out there.
Yeah, and he's only 23, so he's young enough that I think some people will look at him and go, look, this guy can, shoot that three. He can really spread the floor. It's concerning that the rebounding and the free throws and things like that have gone down. You know, you would like to see a guy at least improve in those categories a little bit just to show that he's doing something else out there. And I thought coming into this season with a new coach in Billy Donovan, I thought maybe this is what he needs. You know, he'd been under the Jim Boylan system there for a while. I thought maybe a new coach can unlock something with him. But maybe now it's time for just a new team and a new situation because it went fine, but it's just... I agree with Trey. I just don't think his long-term future is there in Chicago because... Billy got a good look at him this year and he could have kind of molded him into any sort of player he wanted, but he didn't really convince you that's the sort of style that Billy wants to go forward with. So I think there'll be a market for him. And if the Bulls decide to move on from him, I don't think they're going to be all that disappointed because he just hasn't really quite lived up to what they were hoping for. So he's restricted, though, I guess. So I guess they can still,
still match
and sign and trade as well. So they can maybe get something in return for him. But
how much money is Lauri Markkanen going to get out there? Like, is he going to get more per year than like Alonzo Ball? Less? I mean, there's people, Enzo here in the stream team, Tass. Is Lauri going to demand that Bertans money? I don't know if Enzo's kidding. It might be some truth to it.
16 a year, wasn't it? 5 and 80. Yeah.
I mean, it's not that far-fetched, I don't think, with his age. And like Trey said, 40% three-point shooter and stuff like that. I mean, what do you think about this whole Lauri Markkanen situation before we wrap this up?
Yeah, do you have the hots for Lowry if you're another GM? I personally do, but I totally agree that it's not going to be with the Bulls. I could see him garnering that type of money because of the way he came into this league. Then Jim Boylan definitely didn't work with him whatsoever, asking him to just board and not be a ball handler. But I don't think he really works with the trajectory of this team either. I just think, if you're going to rely on Kobe White, Zach LaVine, and Vooch to be your core three, I know you have Patrick Williams in there, you probably want more of a rim-defending type of defender to complement those dudes. And, that hasn't been Lauri Markkanen, but he is a great offensive asset. So I think they are pumping up the personality. It's a good point by Trey. They are saying This guy is a very, very good guy, and don't take those Jim Boylan years to heart. He's a good player, and yeah, I've watched the flashes, and it's hard to get those flashes out of my brain. He can shoot the lights out, and he can put it on the floor too if he is given that role, that confidence, if he has that. So yeah, I think another team will definitely buy into that as well. It's just not going to be the Bulls.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night, brought to you by BetMGM.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
JD, Tweet of the Night, what do you got, man?
Yeah, well, that's actually from yesterday. We had such a jam-packed show yesterday that we couldn't fit this in. But it's we have to really share this because we have a small but very dedicated community of creative people who take all the stupid shit we say and make it into really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And so this week, I'm Stefan Vasilev, tweeted this: may I present to you my way of celebrating this historic 2021 NBA season, NoDunksDiner.com. Mm. Welcome to the No Dunks Diner, a place to enjoy all our hashtag No Dunks specials. So the specials he's referring to are food puns, basically. So we've got Trey's Big Beef. Those are rebounds, as we know. And then the applesauce, which is assists. And then that's basically it. But he does include the wedge, as potato wedge, right?
Oh, not a salad.
Which at first I was like, okay, that's a bit of a stretch. But is it a stretch? I mean, that's actually, I'm never going to refer to potato wedges as potato wedges. Right. Again, it's a wedgie. They're wedgies. Give me those wedgies. Right. So let's have a look at the site. Here it is. It's just a menu. And this is also part of, this is the weird thing that I guess I kind of don't get, but I do get. It's just a menu of things that have happened, you know, like here's the Rock Island wedgie. What is that? Well, it's a wedgie, you know, and so you can just watch the wedgie and it's, you know, I mean, okay. I say, okay, I like it. Even though I was a bit pissed at Stefan because he came at me with a bit of notes. I don't even know if he knew that it was me he was coming at. But months ago, I guess, when we started the NBA Happy Hour, he enjoyed the Happy Hour. He tweeted this: just finished the No Dunks Happy Hour. You know, watched it at regular speed, no edits, in three sittings. It was probably with a 4-hour one or whatever. Yeah. And then he says he has a picture of our end screen, which I did. Come on, guys, what's with the kerning of that outro graphic font? Squeeze or reduce the size, but please don't mess with the cursive's kerning and flow.
Oh, wow.
Stefan, I have no idea what you're talking about, man. I do these things last minute. I had a graphic that I kind of liked, and I just picked a font and put it in there. I don't know what I'm doing. But anyway, shout out to Stefan. Yeah. He does a great job. He did the Canadian teams, which I loved.
Yep.
And he's always comes through. We got the best audience in the world.
No doubt. All right. Stefan winning Tweet of the Night, but also a little heat there from JD, talking kernings and flow. I mean, that's not JD's. That's the aesthetic that the Photoshop boys sort of went with there. We keep the kernings tight, man. Things are jammed up.
Please don't mess with the kernings on the cursive.
Come on, relax.
The kernings.
Sit back on that. Watch your happy hours. Pop some popcorn kernings. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Great Tweet of the Night, though. NoDunksDiner.com, right? That's the URL. You can go check that out. That's live right now. Shout out to Stefan. Okay, guys, that's it for us here today. We are back, well, later today with a very special podcast. Again, MSNBC's Chris Hayes. Oh, my God. Look at the kerning on that text. That is disgusting.
I like that the graphic makes it look like we actually set up this one-on-one game between Hayes and Fauci.
Yeah, you're right. Now, of course, we're going with this. Look, got to get those clicks, right? But we're going to be talking to Chris Hayes about that awesome video where he did challenge Dr. Fauci to a game of one-on-one basketball. And we're going to get the details on that. Is it going to happen? Did it already go down? down. We didn't know about it. So, yeah, that's where we're going with the graphic. But we'll talk to him about his Bulls fandom, maybe get his thoughts on Larry Merkin in there when we talk to him, and what it's like living in New York right now with the Knicks back in the playoffs. He's a big hoops fan.
He's got thoughts on Larry Merkin.
Okay,
guaranteed.
Great. Well, there you go. So that's later today, Tuesday. We'll get it up in your podcast feed as soon as possible, but you can join us live for 12:30 p.m. Eastern with Chris Hayes talking hoops. Tomorrow, Wednesday, we're back in the morning to break down tonight's two games, those East play-in games, and, of course, preview and predict the two Western Conference play-in games featuring that very, very juicy Lakers-Warriors game. That's on Wednesday. And then, just a reminder, Thursday and Friday, no morning shows. It's the late-night shows because we're going to wait for those games that are going to determine the final team into the playoffs on Thursday and Friday night. We'll wait for that to wrap up. We'll jump on here live late at night, talk about that game, and then, of course, preview four of the actual playoff matchups on Thursday night and then the other four on Friday night because the playoffs tip off on Saturday. Okay, so that's the schedule for this week. Like, comment, and subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Email us your NBA questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Grab your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. And finally, subscribe to The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks so they know that we sent you. All right, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, enjoy the NBA IPO, the initial play-in offering. I guess that was last year, but this is the real play-in, right? Hell, the first one? Yeah.
Embrace the day, people.
You could stay.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.